The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com. The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com. The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly chess interview show where we talk with accomplished chess players, authors, and personalities about their lives, their careers, and how to improve at chess. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters and by Chessable.com. Hello there, listeners. I just wanted to mention a couple things before we get to my interview with legendary Grandmaster Vladimir Hort. Number one, if you're newer to chess or are not familiar with Grandmaster Hort, you should definitely read up on him. The best way to do that is probably to buy his book, My Chess Stories, which has an amazing compendium of 64 stories, some of which we discuss in this show. Number two, of course, you should listen to this interview, but if you're having any trouble understanding what is said in this interview, then I also will be publishing a transcript. So to find the transcript, just go to the show description in the podcast. I'm not entirely sure when the transcript will be available. Hopefully it's when the show comes out, but if it's not, just check back for it in the show description. It'll be added when it's there. You can also always go to perpetualchesspod.com to look for the transcript, or of course, follow me on social media, Twitter or the Perpetual Chess Facebook group, and I will drop it when it's available. But Grandmaster Hort is a legend of the game, and he's got some amazing stories. So whether you appreciate the audio or choose to sit down and read the transcript, I think you will enjoy hearing his perspective. So let's do that now, and let's get to the interview. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We have another treat for you guys this week, another legend of the game. He is a Czech-German grandmaster born in what was then Czechoslovakia and was among the world's best players in the 1960s, 70s, and into the 80s. And he's been playing up through this current decade. He was the five-time national champion in Czechoslovakia. He emigrated to West Germany in 1985 and was the three-time West German national champion, a 14-time Olympiad participant for both countries. He's played every world champion from Botvinnik through Anand, with the exception of Kramnik. So just an amazing treasure trove of stories. He's co-author of the classic instructional chess book, The Best Move, which has some very challenging puzzles for you guys if you aren't familiar with that classic book. And he's out with a relatively new and recently translated book called My Chess Stories that I have had the opportunity to read. And it's just great for this podcast. It's just 64 stories from Grandmaster Hort's time in the game. Of course, he had so many brush with legends and so many amazing encounters as well as memorable games. So it was a real pleasure to read about it. And I am excited to welcome him to the show. So Grandmaster Hort, thank you for joining us.
Yes, I thank to you, Ben. Thank you.
My pleasure. And listeners, we're doing this by phone, so I hope the sound is okay. And I should say, Grandmaster Hort has been a bit self-conscious about his English. I think it sounds great. So I'm more concerned about the sound than his English, but I think both will be worthwhile to get to hear the stories of such a legend.
Yeah. Well, I am prepared. I am waiting for eventually your questions. Yeah, you mentioned this book and yes.
Okay, well, Grandmaster Hort, I've read the book and greatly enjoyed it. And on this podcast, I've been privileged to interview some other legends like yourself, as well as trainers and other modern top players. Even adults working to get better at chess. But we always like to hear great stories, both about brushes with great players. I know you've had many. And just about sort of chess in context. And one of my favorite stories from your book was your story of traveling to Hastings in 1967. I felt like that story really provided a perspective for how far chess has come in the intervening, I guess it's 5 decades and 3 years. So this is a tournament that you ultimately won, but could you tell our listeners just a bit about the experience of getting there? Because it was really amazing to me.
Yes, I was just without any money from the Czech Federation, and I came late to England, and I had to spend my night in completely, it was cold, just terrible, and so I found myself just to get under the tree, you know, and suddenly I was disturbed because there was snow and the policeman discovered me there. And it was nice because I could spend the rest on the police station. And I showed my passport and I had no money, so they gave me even covered, and I could spend it in one room where normally criminals, they did tea for me. And since that time, next day I was lucky because I was not controlled even, you know. And so I appreciate the tree.
Yeah. So I just want to give listeners a little bit more context. So so Grandmaster Hort was not given much money or any money by the Czechoslovakian Chess Federation or the country for this tournament. He's already the top player in the country and a top 20 player in the world, certainly in the top 2 players. And to get there, you wrote in the book that you took a train to a boat, and then you arrive in England and you still have to get to the tournament site, and you end up sleeping in the park because there's no other place. You're not able to get to finalize transportation to the playing site. And then a police officer finds you and takes you to the police station. So and for the last part of the night, instead of sleeping in the park, you're at the police station. And this is a world-class chess player. So Grandmaster Hort, we know that you ultimately emigrated from Czechoslovakia, but how did it feel at the time? Were you angry, or was this just the way things were back then?
Yes, actually, the truth about my emigration is, you know how it was. Of course, I didn't like communism at all. But I was waiting for my son. He somehow was thinking of joining me. And from this part, I was playing for Pragosport. You know, it was organization that actually sold ice hockey players to Switzerland, also Compass, the whole ice, holiday on ice was Czech. And we just had to give the money to communism, and it cost me also my work for Hilgert, you know. He had to pay something like 60,000 mark in the time. It was a lot of money.
Wow. Yeah, so you waited for your son to get older in order to emigrate. But in your time as a chess player, how frustrating was it? I mean, was it like, at what point did you know that you wanted to emigrate, and where, and how did you plan it and stuff like that?
Yes, I was planning it, and it was the highest time, you know. I emigrated direct. I went from my last interzonal tournament in Sousse and in Tunis, you know. I believe that I had some chances, you know, there. I was, at the end, I lost some games with Yermenkov, and I could also beat Shuba from Romania. And now they are, I think both of them, they are still existing. And my, how would I say it, my, that should just take care of me, you know, he was also my second. And I just let him because he was, he liked to eat ice. And I went for him and I let in the hotel, please give me time, you know, his name was Vrabec. And but he did not. He went strictly to Czech embassy, and you know Tunis was not so good. So what I did when I was passing the control to get to Lufthansa, strict to Germany, I played va-bank. I let $200 in my passport, so that they let me go. And the guy who was just controlling it, he took it, and he said, yes, please follow the line and you go.
Wow.
So I met in the, there were already in the plan Sosonko, and again, GM Sosonko, who also played there in this tournament, and I opened my bottle of champagne there, and then I called to home, Mayday, Mayday. It was just to my mother that she was living still at that time, so that we agreed that Mayday, so I am in Germany forever.
Wow. That must have been, I mean, I'm sure a flood of emotions, both good and bad. I mean, you had wanted that for a long time, but you left some family behind. So one question I had is, how did you know to leave the $200 in the passport? Had someone given you that advice?
Yeah, because he could also stop me, you know, why the guy does not go to Czechoslovakia, but he goes to Germany. You know, it was possible in that time.
Wow.
And my guy, who was my secondant, he went strictly to the Czech embassy, and he said, no, he's now leaving us, probably, you know. So I did it. Well, wow. It was worse of my escape.
And did you already speak some German at the time?
Yes, perfect.
Oh, that must have helped a lot. So how were you able to get situated in Germany?
Yes, well, actually, I was there already working as a trainer from Pragosport, and you also find this Hilgert also in some stories in my book. Yeah, he was nice fellow. He paid it till the end what he should pay. He does not need it. And he was really taking also my interests in the hand, you know. He was visiting, in the time still was alive, Wisniewski, who organized also this Mogadishu, you know, in that time was terrible. Some plan was taken from terrorists, and this guy said, okay, Mr. Hort, it is some public interest that he stayed here, and so I got very easily Czech papers.
Well, I'm glad that that was able to work out. And again, there's so many 64 stories in the book, as I mentioned, and so many of them are great. So we won't be able to cover them all. But in light of Grandmaster Lubomir Kovalik's recent passing away, I actually recently on the show, I had I.M. John Donaldson, who was friendly with him, and told a few stories about Grandmaster Kovalik. And I know that his name comes up in your book in a memorable yeah. story involving Brezhnev. Would you be able to share a bit of that story and maybe some general memories?
Well, I was very sorry about Lubos. He passed away, and I got a report on him. I was very sad because he was actually half a year older than me, and I still saw him last year in Prague. And he died on Krebs. I don't know. He was still there. He was also working for GMA and with Besselkog and all this. And this story was that we got also suddenly report that Brezhnev died, and actually I said, no, I cannot now. Many delegation states and they sitting, I did understand, not the Swiss diplomacy on this. Maybe they should say it as before. And so I said, no, I will not sit here. This is really terrible, because he decided, Brezhnev, it was last voice for Czech overfall. You know, this Warsaw Pact came then through him. So I went and I found Lubos there. He was there also on the toilet. And so, actually, we spent there pissing on Brezhnev this time. And we were just two Czechs, the same idea.
Yeah, so, yeah, two Czechs, one idea. So, basically, they didn't want to be there for this ceremony honoring Brezhnev. So, they both escaped to the bathroom, unbeknownst to the other, at the same time. So, just a great story.
Yes.
And so in addition to your sort of more interpersonal stories, like we're sharing, I also enjoyed the one about the sort of pact you made with Grandmaster Bronstein. Of course, you had many legendary over the board encounters with so many of these players. So I'd like to get into a few of those stories, Grandmaster Hort, but first we're just going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. As always, Perpetual Chess is proud to be brought to you in part by Chessable.com. Chessable is a chess learning website that utilizes its Move Trainer technology to help you learn and remember opening lines, tactical patterns, and endgames. It is endorsed by GM Magnus Carlsen and features courses from I.M. John Bartholomew, Sam Shanklin, Wesley So, and so many others. Chessable has over 100,000 members and features hundreds of courses both for free and for purchase. So if you haven't checked it out yet, please go to chessable.com and take a look around. Back to the interview. Okay, and we are back. And Grandmaster Hort, there's so many great stories and, you know, so many legendary encounters. But one that I particularly enjoyed was Your story involving making a draw offer to former world champion Botvinnik. Could you share the details of that one?
Yes, it was very strange because we had some terrible discussion. We played the tournament. It really happened in Monte Carlo. And he wanted to win the tournament. But Larsen was also involved. And I had a jam game with Larsen, and suddenly telephone, and it was Botvinnik. And to me, he wanted to show me some variation in this game. And I was very angry. I said to him, here, I analyze well enough, and you just want to help me because you want to win this tournament. It is not the way, you know, I am not used to it, to such a help. And we got very angry, and he just put the phone, you know, and then we, I played him next day. And actually, it was strange. He came, he did not give me the hand. You know, we just sit there. He pressed me in the game, but in completely drawing position. I offered him draw in Russian, in English, and he was sitting there. And imagine, I came suddenly to the board, and there is nobody, just formula, yeah, just, you know, he left already, and the referee said to me, well, Mr. Hort, if you wish, you won the game, because he just left the game, I will be your witness, but think of it very carefully. I thought very carefully, and then I signed it, and I left him, but it was my last when I really saw Botvinnik.
Yeah,
he was not kind of sympathy of me. He was already, you know, Mr. Johnson, he was also Stalinist, you know, and about him is nothing active, nothing to say what would help him somehow. I did not like him. Maybe he also he saved the Keres. I was later in Keres at home, and I wanted to know why did you lose 3-1, but Keres did not answer to me. He was giving me whiskey, you know, and all this. And so it is for me somehow forever. The Russians, they were just keeping their mouths shut. Keres was, of course, with Aliekhin. That is, I did not see him there, but he could still explain Czechoslovakia. Keres was born, I think, 1916, and he died during the tournament in Tallinn, 75. He was still excellent. He won the tournament. You know, he was suffering from some illness, and when he was very all right, so he was still also, at the end, very good player. He beat Taimanov in the tournament, and he won very convincingly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you, what is still also for you interesting, my wife, Brigitte, and me, we are working on second part, so it means that we will have also second book. We have already many anecdotes together, and so I am thinking, we are thinking really to the next part, and maybe this will appear at the end of the year.
Oh, that would be, that's great to hear. I look forward to that. So the Botvinnik draw offer story, so it's also explained in the book, but I just wanted to make sure I understood what happened. So the game is, it's becoming clear it's going to be a draw. And as you mentioned, you had the interaction with him where he tried to help you prepare for an opponent where you didn't feel it was appropriate already. So you offer him a draw, as you say, in many languages to make sure that he understands.
Yeah.
And of course, the etiquette is that if the opponent makes a move, that means that they've turned down the draw offer. So am I correct that he then made the move and then just left?
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
So they, and then the arbiter said that gave you the right to claim a win if you wanted, but you didn't feel right about that.
No, I did not like it.
So
somehow I just signed it and I said, I hope I don't see Botvinnik anymore.
So I guess you guys were not on the best of terms, having different political views. But so what do you think, why wouldn't he just accept the draw offer if it's a draw? Was it a person, was it because of your relationship with him, or why do you think he did that?
Yeah, it was also from the already day before with Larsen, this
right.
accident, you know, and he didn't like that I make him really like I was saying, yes. No.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, that story of your sportsmanship calls to mind the legendary story of the candidates match against Spassky in 1977, where you guys both had some health issues, but basically,
I still remember it. Yes, I was winning completely, and I just forgot about the time.
Yeah.
Actually, he needed to win this because he said afterwards we were not on good terms long time, but now he's already dying. He's in very bad shape. He had to leave his wife, Marina Shcherbakova, and you know, they had one son, and they told me, Kramnik, that this son was junkie, he was taking hashish and all this, and Marina wanted to make even Spassky, she wanted to have over him the power just to take this money from him, you know. He had this money still from Fischer's fight in Svatý Stefan. And then Kramnik also played there some role that, you know, he had to arrange for Spassky new passport in the Soviet embassy. And also Spassky then had to leave, take passport, and immediately he left to the airport and then to Moscow. I did not see him lately, but he is really in very bad shape.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. I had heard sort of whispers about that, but I'm sorry to hear that. So when did this story involving Kramnik securing a passport, when did that take place?
I don't know exactly. Some years ago.
Okay.
I talked to Spassky, to Kramnik, but somehow I lost time where it was, but it really was true, you know. I saw him, Spassky also, we were invited to Fischer still 1 year later, and it was very funny because they invited everybody, also Lombardi. I still could see Lombardi was, I think you know the name, William Lombardi.
Yes, of course.
He was in the time 180 kilos. And he could not play chess anymore, and Spassky also could not play. So we played there one tournament where Portish was there, Benke was there, Olafsson and me, and the tournament won Portish. Yes, I came second in this time, and but Marina was there also, and I saw already it does not functioning well. Spassky said to me, Fischer was not so interesting. I think it was true, maybe not, but he won the main battle in his life. It was to go get away from Soviet Union.
Yeah.
But maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so many players, like the aforementioned Grandmaster Jenna Sosanko, fought similar battles, unfortunately.
Yes, but Korchnoi also.
Yeah, of course. What were your interactions with Korchnoi like?
Well, we talk about it already in one Hastings, you know. He said to me he want to leave and he want to have advice from him what land he should take, you know. So I gave him I said to him, Swiss would be the best because the Russians could not do much blockade of you when you are Swiss, when you play under Swiss. But Korchnoi, I had rather good relationship.
So he took your advice?
Yeah, at the end.
Excellent. And the story that you told relating to Keres and Botvinnik, could you go into that a bit more? I'm not sure I caught all of the details.
You mean what happened when I got with my down from my chair, yeah.
That one I remember as well. But didn't you tell a story when I asked you about the draw for a story with Botvinnik? You mentioned that Keres had a match with Botvinnik that he lost 3-1.
Yes, and but he did not give me answer because Botvinnik probably he did it. He went to Stalin in the time, and I was wondering. Keres had to repay it by losing 3-1, but he never tell me if it was true or not. He just keep silent.
Okay. And you did give some details on one sort of similar story, which I'll ask you about in a minute. But first, I wanted to get into the first of many listener questions. So thanks to all the supporters of the podcast for sending in questions. And this one is from Michael Allard, who asks, he says, many stories have been told about Soviet players working together during tournaments. What is your perspective on this as a participant in many tournaments with top Soviet players? In general, did it feel like it was the USSR versus everyone else, or did it feel like they were just compatriots playing the same tournament?
Yeah, well, mostly they were correct. Yes, mostly. But of course, at the end, they had to think, they have been representing such a might country in chess, you know. So sometimes some of them were not correct, you know. They just were throwing the games. I could give you example who did it. Very famous was Karpov through it, because once Mislov told me in Interpolis, where Karpov were winning, how would I say it, almost each year, he said, well, how can I pass the border in this game? How can I say no to draws? And if you really control it, then you will find that Karpov lost never to Soviet chess player in the period of 11 years.
Wow.
And at the same time, he lost to Portish, to Larsen, to Hartmann, total nobody from Germany. So you really have to accept my explanation. The Russians were forbidden to beat Karpov, you know, because there was always a threat they will never go to the chess tournament anymore.
Wow.
I am saying it, yeah.
Well, yeah. Can you think of any games where it looked like where Karpov was playing a fellow Soviet player and it looked like his position was bad and then he didn't lose? Or do you think that it was mostly steered away from him potentially losing earlier than that?
Yes, also Fischer was convinced that he is winning. He was still following Karpov, and he is also convinced that Karpov was not correct, that the Russians had to let him. We have in German one expression, Wasserträger. I don't know whether you go with it. It is a guy who is just bringing water to the chief, who will then maybe had a finish like in bicycles. You know that they, but Karpov has not good cards here.
Okay.
You know, there is also, I can, if you really still have interest, tell you one game that I am sure that Karpov won it without game. It's from Bugoino. He came to me and he want to drink vodka, you know, and then really it came, I had to let him win this game.
So,
from Karpov.
So, sorry, when and where was the game?
In Bugoino, Meran, very famous game, Meran, a variation. You can see the game.
Okay.
And Karpov really is here. He has not good cards.
Okay. And you also told the story in the book of the rumored Mark Taimanov candidates match. You said that Grandmaster Milan Matulovic told you a story,
yeah,
relating to the candidates in 1970 on a similar in a similar theme, I should say.
Yeah, yes, he got Taimanov $600 for it. You know, Matulovic were just playing a theater, and you know, Matulovic was also not highly good. He took also one move back against Bilek in Interzonen tournament, and his argumentation was, I did 1,000 good moves, so I can take one back. He was not. He was also very much in red milieu, and his there is also about him. This his aunt was always waiting for him and taking him the money, and why he also adjourned the game was without three pawn, he didn't give it up, so because his aunt was reading Politica, it was newspaper, and he was there higher in the standing. So he played it just for his own.
Huh. Yeah. And so Matulovic, as you mentioned, he didn't have a reputation as being, he wasn't considered trustworthy. As you say, there was they called him Zhdubovic because he had a famous game where he grabbed a piece and then said Zhdub, and there were some other questionable.
Yes, yes.
Questionable.
Yes, Bilek was it, yes. And this is very funny. Next time he came against Bilek and he was playing it standing. Imagine he won even. He played a tempo and he won. So you can think about justice in chess. Yeah.
So, but do you find him to be definitely reliable when he says he received $600 to lose to Taimanov?
Yes, of course. Of course, of course.
There's no way he would lie about that given his Okay.
No.
Just checking.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got some more listener questions for you, Grandmaster Hort, but first we're going to take another break and hear from our friends at Chess Mood. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by chessmood.com. Here is what Chess Mood offers. It is a subscription-based website that provides a comprehensive opening repertoires both for white and for black. They also have middle game and end game videos from their cast of professional grandmaster trainers. They also have some free content that you can check out. Grandmaster Avchek Grigorian, who's their founder, and you can hear on episode 192 of Perpetual Chess, has a blog where he writes about common challenges for tournament players that you can check out for free. And they also started offering free YouTube videos called Daily Lessons with the Grandmaster. So go to their website, check out what they have to offer, and be sure to subscribe to their YouTube as well. And let's get back to the interview. And we are back, and we have another listener question. This is from longtime friend of the podcast, Brian Caron, who also, of course, founded the extremely popular Facebook chess book collectors group, so quite knowledgeable about chess history. And Brian asks you, Grandmaster Hort, he says that they had a chess talent test used to identify promising youngsters in Czechoslovakia, and that you did incredibly well. And he was wondering if you could provide an opinion and a description of what that test was like.
Excuse me, I did not understand full the question. Shall I?
Yeah. Brian Caron mentioned that he had read that as a child you took a test that showed that you were talented at chess, and he was wondering if you could describe that test.
Talent. What is talent in chess? I think Lubojevic was very talented. You know, I think it is that you can see around the corner. So you have just to see what is coming to you. Lubojevic was also talented. I had with him the horrible score. Tony Miles was also talented. But what is talent? I don't know it.
What do you think it is? What constitutes chess talent in your mind?
Talent, it is part of you are working also very hard. Portis was very famous. He worked on chess 8 hours in his best time per day. I think nobody worked like Lajos. I saw him, Lajos. He still played chess, but he likes singing more than chess. So he's a widower, and his wife was taking care also of his financial matters. And Katerina is already dead for many times. It is just life. Lajos, he was very maybe gifted, but I don't have any definition of talent now. I'm sorry. You have it or you don't have it.
And you did mention somewhere in the book that you feel that you have a good memory.
Yeah, of course. Memory, this is necessary. It's part of talent. I could... Remember, I was very proud of middle game. You know, I wanted always to decide the games not in the opening, but in the middle game. So I was no good theoretician, but I studied middle game in Czechoslovakia very much on my weekend house. I closed myself and I wanted to know where the pieces have to go. You know, how does it function? It's maybe some kind of talent.
Yeah, and another listener wrote in to ask, how did your training evolve over the years, and what advice would you have given from your later self to your younger self as an improving chess player?
Understand this. Well, first of all, I suppose they love chess. It is necessary. And then everybody has to find his way. You know, I also was saying in chess, well, if I get this question, you have to play chess like you are having problems with cats, you know. It means in the same direction, not against the direction if you care about the cats, this is all my explanation.
And you mentioned that you preferred studying openings to middle. I mean, sorry, you preferred studying middle games to openings. So, what was your method for studying middle games?
Middle game. I was getting through the books that I was interesting. You know, you have a lot of books. I remember I was from Hans Kmoch. I was taking his advantage, and I like very much the book Rubinstein Wins. Hans Kmoch, Rubinstein could not do it, so Hans Kmoch did it for him, and then he became the money from him, Rubinstein. I'm at the son of Rubinstein. Imagine, still in Belgium was he son, and he looked like Akiba Rubinstein. About Akiba Rubinstein, you tell they call Polish chess friend let him stay. He was Jewish, so they let him stay in one sanatorium. And when the war was over, so he was really crazy. He was crazy a little bit, and so it is also one who suffered very much.
Rubinstein's son was crazy?
No, father was.
Oh, his father, yeah. Sad but true.
Mr. Rubinstein, I also played some blitz game in Belgium, in Antwerpen.
Wow. So many stories. It's amazing. Speaking of chess books, as you just mentioned a couple, Brian Caron also mentioned, he said that your book, The Best Move, is a classic, and he wondered how you and Jansa decided on the format and content of the book.
Well, actually, the whole idea was mine. You know, Jansa was very happy that he could participate in this. We wrote it on my weekend house in Prague still. And it had a really success. This book was translated in all languages, in Dutch, in Icelandic, in Russian, naturally. And he is very famous, and the book is very famous, and I am glad that it had such a success, yes.
Yeah.
There have been good examples. We did it like Dr. Ewe or somebody like this, and the book was really world success.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this quote that Boris Gelfand gave about the book, but he said, I discussed it with Jakob Agard, and he said that the vast majority of the positions are correct under computer analysis. This is amazing.
Yeah.
He says, I saw it in my childhood, and I have some very nice memories.
Well, I was glad that we wrote it. Yes.
So many of these classic books, I mean, they still have great value to read, but a lot of them, when you plug them into the engine, you do find lots of mistakes. So what do you think it is about your approach for the book that enabled you to have such correct analysis?
Yeah, we analyzed very deeply and very long, and we gave, and of course we work still without computers or this, but we spent a lot of time. I think, therefore, we repeated, and we were spending sometimes almost 1 week on one example.
Yeah, I guess there's no substitute for hard work.
Well, yes, you have to work if you want to achieve something. Yeah.
So jumping around a little bit, just because I've got so many questions from supporters of the podcast, and I want to be sure to get to them all. So this next one is from Jason Murray, who says, Grandmaster Hort, thank you for being on the podcast. You have played some of the greatest players of all time. I'm curious which of them, if any, was the most intimidating to play against? And also, did you change your preparation based on who you were playing against and their playing style? Thank you.
Hi. Well, I shall mention probably Polugaevsky, yes. Because we played this match, I still remember Fischer was also there, and he was crying. You know, there was some quarrel, Najdor-Fereshevsky, and Fischer said, no, don't bother, Vlasti, you will play the fourth place. So I played Polugaevsky, and I won 2.5 to 1.5, and we were very active on the first board. So we beat it, Russians. Fischer won against Petrosyan 3-1, and I won, and Portish won with Korchnoi. It was a very nice match. It was hundreds, you know, in Belgrade. it was incredible how many spectators they have been there. And, you know, they were sold out the ticket. We played in some trade union place where 2,000 people could get in. And it was all days sold out.
Amazing.
Nice memories.
Yeah, and you've got some great stories from away from the board in that tournament as well. Do you have any, like, when you think of it, what's your first memory of that match and that?
Well, I still see these people in front of me, and well, it was nice. You know, if you are young, it's everything very nice. And there is also one night there where I am playing Neidorf on the free day, and Bobby Fischer in the book, if you read it, it is a beautiful story. Yeah.
Excellent.
On
yeah.
the free day.
And I want to hear some more stories about Bobby Fischer, but first, Grandmaster Hort, we're just going to take one more break to hear from our friends at aimchess.com. In case you are not familiar with our friends and sponsors, aimchess.com, we wanted to take a quick break to tell you about what they do. What they do is they collect your games from LeeChess or chess.com, your site of choice, and look for data-driven trends of things you can work on, such as converting an advantage, a specific opening, possibly tactics, whatever it may be. They create personalized lessons based on your games and even review positions from your games where you may have made a mistake. So I love the product, and there's a free version that you can check out. And if you like it, you can subscribe to Aim Chess. If you use the promo code CHESS30, you can save 30% on the cost, and they will know you came from Perpetual Chess. The details will be in the show notes, but for now, let's get back to the interview. Okay, and we are back, and we've got a few more listener questions. This one is from Steven Sparks. Thank you for the support, Steven. And Steven asks, he says, Vlastimil played many greats over the board, but how does he compare Fischer and Karpov in particular? You've written extensively.
Yeah, I like this question. I think that even later, where already Fischer lost his title, he was still following the chess, you know. So he would not give to Karpov any draw like a match, for example, Kasparov in this terrible match, 5-3. I got even from Bobby one letter that I like very much. And when I saw him in Budapest 1993 last time, he would not give him draw, so Karpov, who lost many kilos of weight already against Kasparov, and Fischer stopped this, was saying me, well, how can Grigorik do this? It is like Blasty, they were running marathon, and suddenly they call it off because some players or some runners can get sun. From sun is danger for them, and they stop it for because they are afraid that he will not stand it till the end. Yes, 42 kilometers, so they stopped this. It's like this, what Grigorik did as a referee in Moscow, where Karpov was winning 5-1 and then 5-3, and it was obvious that he cannot keep it. So Bobby would not give him any draws, and he would play till the end. So I am convinced that he would win just because he would not give him any short draws as Kasparov did it, or Grigorik should not, you know, then he stopped to be friend with Gligo. I have this letter from him, and it is for me really beautiful that he wrote me, and I have his letter.
Yeah. And you, of course, had many interactions with Fischer over the year. As you mentioned, you got together with him in Yugoslavia in the 90s, but also, of course, earlier interactions, mushroom picking. You tell a story of mushroom picking with him.
Yes, there is also a photo of me, mushrooms, yes, it was incredible, you know, he did not know anything of this, but, you know, he did not trust me, so he waited, you know, I was really half an hour, I had to eat them, I was just doing from him, but, you know, Agrippina also did this, you know, to all his, you know, Agrippina is famous that he made a gift, you know, the mother of Nero.
And how did Fischer's personality change over the decades that you saw him?
Many, much. I did not understood it, you know. I was with him always, but I don't remember why he started suddenly to be so anti-Semitic. I don't know it. Yes, maybe who could tell something about this is Eugenio Torre, who was in Philippines also where Bobby was there. And imagine there was one Philippine lady who, you know, Bobby lies in Selfos in Iceland, yes. And this lady claimed that his daughter is also from Bobby. So, you know, they had to make his DNA, you know.
Yeah.
So they had to put him out. And then suddenly I was very glad that this Japanese lady, she is still, I think, she accompanied Bobby there, and she could still take something like $100,000 to Japan.
Okay, so we just have a couple more questions, Grandmaster Hort. One is about, of course, how chess has changed. So obviously, you mentioned that openings weren't your specialty, and now they're kind of, for any top player, they have to be their specialty. So I'll get to the question in a minute, but one thing I was curious is just how closely you follow modern chess. Like, where, you know, as we record, Vikansi completed in the past week. Do you watch tournaments like that still?
Yeah, I still like watching the tournament, but in this corona time, it's everywhere. We don't play chess now, strictly. I don't like any online chess, you know. I also always like that my opponent is against me, sitting against me. You know, of course, I follow now the tournament is, for example, this Tata Steel tournament. Well, I follow it. I don't know how was there, what was there with Corona, whether they were just sitting how 2 meters, you know, we have all these rules. They are very bad. We don't play now also in my chess club in Oberhausen. Yeah. Through Corona, everything is very bad.
Yeah. And obviously Magnus had a disappointing result in Tata Steel.
Yeah.
But
yeah, well, he lost something like 15 points.
Yeah.
But Firouza, I think, is really a new talent. And well, but also a winner later against Giri, it was some among Agnon, yeah, you know, this Hollander, this young Dutch player with him. I played some years ago.
Oh, also. Did you? He must have been a young kid then, Jordan van Forest.
Yeah. These from the family, there are 7 of them, and everybody plays chess.
Yeah, and they're all strong.
Also his sisters and those. But it is good that Holland has some nice team now with Gary.
And how do you compare Carlsen's game? I know you've been on record in the past saying you believe Fischer is the strongest of all time. How do you compare Carlsen with Kasparov and Fischer?
With Fischer, well, Fischer had he could play Seri, many moves, just the strongest move, you know, 11, 13 strongest move. I think that nobody can do it. Even Carlson makes a mistake. Therefore, I think is Fischer just the strongest player forever.
Yeah, and you witnessed some dominant blitz performances by Fischer as well, correct?
Yeah. Incredible. He was beating us horrible in this, where was it, on the sea there.
Okay, and we just have a couple more questions for you, Grandmaster Hort. Thank you so much. This has been quite an honor and great to hear your stories. So this one is from Ed Daly, who asks, he says, if GM Hort were a top 10 player today, he'd be interested to know how you think modern day use of powerful computers would affect his enjoyment of the game. Obviously, it would have a big impact.
It's also a nice question. Actually, I have to deal with computers, but I think we should not, you know, because computers can spoil us this pleasure, you know. I did not like it, you know. Pleasure is to play chess just guy against guy. And I don't like much computers. I follow, of course, the chess on internet, but I would prefer they should never come in this computer. They should not be there. It is really guy against a guy. I don't like it much.
Yeah, although it's hard to undo it, right? I mean, you can't. We can't avoid them. We don't have to play the games on the computer, but we can't avoid the computer preparation.
Yeah, you are right. That is what I actually believe as well.
Yeah, Grandmaster Jan Timman said that he didn't, in today's age, he didn't think he would be a chess professional because of computers.
Still, I would like to mention the Bobby, who actually we are also thankful to him that he stopped this analyzing Gen games. You know, it is also his, good thing what he did for chess.
Yeah. So he did do some great things despite his personal shortcomings. Excuse me. Okay, so one other question is from Mark Fitzpatrick, which is, he says he'd be interested to know what it is about chess that has kept you playing for so many years, what you've enjoyed about the game, and has it changed over time?
Well, this question is, why is it start? Well, I tried always to be very natural, you know, and I like chess so much that I cannot live with chess, you know. I am looking now, really, the corona is over, and then I go, my first way is going to my chess club, to Oberhausen, near to me. Even I have to go by train. I cannot drive car anymore, but the chess club liked me, and I do also some trainer job. I say, okay, now I am a little bit weaker, so I called Marcel Becker, he's an international master. I said, Mark, you will play now first board. But I am still doing points, very important points for Oberhausen. And I am glad that I, 20 years ago, I stopped my playing for Hilgert and I found this club, you know. They like me very much.
Yeah, it's great that you continue to play. Do you read any of the literature, any of the new books? Do you read New in Chess magazine? How do you keep up with the game?
Yes, I of course I like very much New in Chess. Imagine, you know it probably, this Norwegian company bought it now.
Yeah, big news, Magnus's company.
Yeah. So now he will be there and he will have his politic there on show, maybe something of your game, of his game, yeah.
Magnus will only get exclams and new in chess from now on.
Yeah, I don't know whether he does it, but they do a lot of things. They buy a lot of things, you know. This is, he has some support in Norwegian. It's very important for chess.
Yeah, it is. They're... One of his companies, Chessable, is one of the sponsors of this podcast. So,
yeah.
And of course, I'm a big fan of Chess24 as well. So the last question, Grandmaster Hort, is from Cody Noble, who asks, what are your favorite activities outside of chess?
Ah, that's very nice. Well, look, I am a little bit, I depend on my... I try to walk much. I cannot do any sport anymore. But I like actually walking around the house. I can still do something like 300 meters and all this. I cannot play tennis anymore like Spassky did it or Keres. And I am rather happy. I don't know. I am working on my garden. Also, this is possible. I am very much enjoying the next month. I would like to spring. You know, it will give me new energy.
That's great to hear. And you mentioned in the book. Sorry, you mentioned in the book that you had become a fan of the NBA on a trip to the United States. So I was wondering if you still follow the NBA or if you keep up with any other sports.
No, before I played, you know, I was ice hockey even. I follow very much NBA and also ice hockey, you know, my favorite club where I was there once with Fischer agreed, but he did not appear was San Antonio Spurs.
Okay.
You know?
So
I like basketball, but I like ice hockey. When I was 17, I had to choose, you know, ice hockey or chess. And I had, when I played, you know, I was a goalkeeper. And I had to be on the stadium in 3.5 hour in the morning, you know, to just get all this on me, you know, what you have as ice keeper, you know. And I remember still that I had no mask, you know, without mask. So imagine, you know. But then I decided for studium and I stopped. This ice hockey activities. But I like, of course, your National League in USA. It is beautiful.
Oh, thank
I
you.
I like Tampa Bay and all this. I am following it still today, result. And well, sometimes I make even bets on it. It is just for fun.
Yeah, it can be fun for sure. And the story that Grandmaster Hort is referring to is he was, when he was in San Antonio for chess, Bobby Fischer was supposed to go with him to an NBA game, but Fischer didn't show up. But I'm glad you went, and I'm glad you chose chess over ice hockey as well, as I'm sure many listeners are as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I don't think I have any other questions. Grandmaster Hort, is there anything else you would like to say before we let you go?
No, I was rather happy, and I told you, I was rather, you are really also, you know, almost everything in chess. So please, Ben, follow chess, and we will see what it comes, yeah?
Yeah.
Really, you can be happy, because this second part of the book will follow. I have already over 70 new stories.
Excellent. Yeah. And so for listeners, again, the book is called My Chess Stories. Here in the United States, it can be a little bit tough to track down, but you can get it shipped from Europe. And we're hoping that our friends at Chess for Less or US Chess Sales or even Amazon get their hands on it. So keep an eye out, because there's just so many amazing stories. We really only scratched the surface in this interview. And we look forward to more. One last thing I wanted to say before we let you go, Grandmaster Hort, I did just want to give thanks to Michael Boos of the Schalkes Flüster podcast, German language chess podcast, because Michael helped put us in touch, and I greatly appreciate that.
Yes, we are in contact with him,
That's great. Okay, well, thank you again, Grandmaster Hort. You please be safe during these last days of the coronavirus, and I'm sure chess fans look forward to seeing you at the chess club.
Ben, you do.
Okay, take care.
No corona.
Exactly.
All we will make corona.
Exactly. We're almost there.
Thank you.
Big shout out to Matthew Passy, my producer, been helping us for over 4 years. Much appreciated as always. I also would like to thank everyone who helped spread the word about the show, whether it be by word of mouth or a positive review on a podcast platform. I can't even keep track of all the platforms anymore, but every review is appreciated. I also wanted to remind you guys, you are always welcome to follow me or Perpetual Chess on social media. On Twitter, I'm at BennyFischel1. That's where I'm most active. We also have the Perpetual Chess Facebook group where we post every episode, and sometimes the guests chime in to continue the conversation. The Perpetual Chess Instagram page is unretired. Follow us at Perpetual Chess, where we post weekly clips. If you would like to email me, the easiest way is ben@perpetualchesspod.com. Also, of course, want to thank our sponsors, Chessable.com and Chess Aim and Chess Mood. Thanks for helping the cause, guys. Much appreciated, and great products that I'm proud to be affiliated with. Last but not least, of course, I want to thank all of our Patreon and PayPal supporters. I would like to give extra special thanks to the following people and entities: Chessable.com, David Lazarus of LazmanChess.com, Quality Chess Books, the Capital City Chess Club, the Abysmal Depths of Chess blog, Adapta Interactive Web Designs and Services, the Apprenchess Twitch channel, Andrew Alharji, Andrew Bach, Aniti Deer, Austin Clough, Benjamin Porteau, Bill Sigler, Kathy Carr, Chad Oliver, the Charlotte Chess Center, the Chess Central's Chess Blog, Chessmood.com, Chris Flanagan, Chris Lott, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel He, Danny Davidson, David Schreiber, I am Dimitri Schneider, I am Eric Rosen, Eric Tam, Ewan Richardson, Farhan Thawar, Faraz Sawaf, Gary Foreman, Glenn Downing, Greg Harst, I am Greg Shahadi, Gregory Galuk, Guven Manet, James Holyhead, James Kennedy, Jeff Martinson, Jens Green, Jeremy Nielsen, John Jernigan, John Rockefeller, John Cromarty, John MacArthur, Kelly Palmer, Kevin O'Callaghan, King Selt, the King's Crusher YouTube channel, one of the OGs of chess YouTube, Lucio Casada Silva, the law offices of Stuart Katz, Matthew Feeney, Michael Kahn, FM Michael Oblin, Mike Zelazny, Mr. Mike Shahadi, the famous Mr. Dodgy, the Nerdnays Twitch channel, Peter Sodi, the Playmore Chess Academy of the Hamden Chess Club, Reuven Fisher, Reverend Roy Fry, Seattle Chess Club, Shane Unger, Stefan Kelty, Stephen Martinez, Sven Gearson, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tachenko, Todd Bryant of StrongChess.com, Todd Kennedy, The Vintage Patzers, which is a Chess.com improver group, Wayne Beam, William Hogarth, and I also would like to thank Aaron Waffler, Ace Viega, Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adrian Gutierrez, Alan and Maggie Sue, Alex Pejas, Alexander Markovitz, FM Andre Tarakov, Dr. Andrew Perry, Angus McLeod, Barry Hessian, Bill Juniper, Bill Moran, Brad and Andy Rosen, Brett Howard Lynn, Brian Chase, Brian Mullis, Bruce Scott, Brian Tillis of Palm Beach Chess, Chad Hilton, Chess Patzer Spain, I'm not sure if that one's a real name, Dr. Charles Snodgrass, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Baumgartner, Christopher Shabri, Christopher Wood, I am Christoph Zalecki, aka Chess Explained, Coach J's Chess Academy, Corey Budson, Costa Caras, Courtney Fry, Craig Mallon, Daniel Ginsburg, Daniel Naylor, Dave Saylor, David Bleskoczek, David Brown, David Hamblin, David Cramley of Chessable.com, Dalen Shelton, Dennis Parrish, Dirk Durker, FM Donnie Ariel, Dwayne Edmonds, Ed Daly, Ed Mead, Emmanuel Langlois Robitaille, Ethan Smith, Hallelujah Cat, Ian Mason, Indrek Ryland, Felipe Melo Pereira, Fox Valley Chess Club, Francis Letart Lavois, Dr. Frank Tortoris, Frank Zananis, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Geert Vanderveld, Gene Stewart, Gerard Barta, Giovanni Russo, Hans Schrute, Harish Srinivasan, Howard Vihan, Jacob Kovacs, Jason Apollo, Jason Murray, Jacques Perry, James Aspinwall, James Bonastia, James Muir, Jason Woolham, J.D. Chakrabarty, Jeff Anderson, Jeffrey Martello, Yep Hoyland, Jerry Wells, Jim Ratliff, Joe Valdez, Joel Thomas Ramos, John Tulley, Juan Almagar, Dr. John Fallon, John Fernandez, John Fontaine, John Hartman, Jeff Jeffrey, John McMurtry, Jonathan Slater, John Quist, John Tully, Jose Rodriguez, Justin Gardner, Jen Shahadi, Joe Rocky, John Thompson, Josh Friedel, Kare Christensen, WGM, Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, Kevin Pryor, Kior Gata of the Lakeshore Chess Club, I am Kostya Kovutsky of the Chess Dojo, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Kyle McAvoy, Larry Cook, Larry Reiforth, Laura Boyovsky, Macaulay Peterson, Mark Fitzpatrick, Mark Miller, Martin Knudsen, Martin Krug, Matthew Passy, Matthew Tedesco, Matthias Plock, Mechanics Institute of San Francisco, Michael Allard, Michael Hudson, Mike Clem, Mitchell Fabian, Nate Gabel, Nate Solon, Neil Bruce, Nigmat Mulajanov, Nicholas Isabel, Olaf Mueller Michaels, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Bain, Paul Clarkson, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Richard Hollenbeck, Robert Tichy, Robert Turner, Rory Coleman, Rory Yearwood, Ryan Berg, the Say Chess YouTube channel, Scott Daugherty, Scott McKinnon, Sebastian Finsterwater, Seth Ruzica, Shane Unger, Silver Knights Enrichment, Stefan Roller, WGM, Tatya Vabrahamian, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Tom Edsel, Tomas Komanich, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Vishnu Srikumar, William Brock, William Peterson, FM Zhao Cheng of Chess1000.com, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks, as always, for the support, everyone. I will catch you guys all next week.
Podcast Network.